Welcome to Recalculating Small Business.
Paying freelancers and other temp employees is a difficult task made more onerous by legal requirements. Today we have Erno Turjanen, CEO and founder of Spend, to offer his new approach. He's here to tell us all about it. Erno, welcome to the program, and tell us a little bit about Spend, yourself, and your website.
Thank you for having me. Hi, everybody. So Spend is a new free app for freelancers and small teams, how to manage their money, both personal and business, and earn cashback rewards at the same time doing it. So it's an app that anybody can download from iOS, App Store, and Google Play, and it works for small companies, small teams, freelancers, and so that's Spend. And my personal background is I come from Finland, Scandinavia, came to New York, America about 7 years ago, and I have a long career in being an entrepreneur, almost more than 20 years now, building different kind of products in mostly in retail and last years in the mobile digital space.
Well, before we go further, you spell out with Spend and your website.
Yeah, the website is spendapp.com, S-P-E-N-T-A-P-P.com, spendapp.com.
Okay. I have a lot of questions, but Dan, I'm going to turn it over to you first.
Thank you. Erno, welcome to the show. I'm fascinating as a serial entrepreneur myself and working with individual artists and creative people. The idea behind your website, if I understand it correctly, is to allow individuals who are not working for a corporation, but are freelancers, as you call them, that sometimes they're called independent contractors, a lot of things. You're giving them a way through your Spend website to track their income and their expenses. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, that is correct. And we utilize your any debit card or credit card or bank account that you might already have, and you just link those cards into the Spend product, and then Spend will show you feed of your transactions, whether they are your personal spending or business related. And we have a very user-friendly product where you can swipe left and right any transactions, and the swiping means that if you swipe left, you allocate that transaction to be as a personal spending, and the ones that you swipe right, these are now business expenses, and the ones that you swipe right to business as a business expense, we built a smart, what we call auto-reimbursement system. So they go through a folder that whoever is approving your expenses, once they receive a notification and they approve them, and then overnight you get reimbursed. So you don't have to wait no longer long time to get your money back, and all the receipts are captured and all of that.
That's a terrific idea. You know, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking about that, and I would really like your perspective on this. Let me give you an example of two companies. One is mm-hmm. Capital One, and the other is American Express.
Mm-hmm.
Capital One has really split its advertising and promotion. Predominantly, though, they're appealing to cash back for businesses, where American Express, which has a business program, still continues to advertise in what I would say is the traditional card marketing. And so is Capital One, are you seeing them as more and more transaction, the banking institution you're transacting with versus, say, American Express?
Yeah, this is interesting. I personally, I'm banking with Capital One, so I'm very familiar with their product. And what they have done is, besides that they have the cashback credit cards, they also now have offers and promotions and coupons and deals in the Capital One app. So, you know, as I'm doing my everyday online banking through the app, I can see offers from any nearby retailers. And it's almost a bit of the same approach as we do. So when I talk about cashback, our cashback is not coming from the credit card fees like we all understand the industry works, but these cashbacks are coming from the merchants. So there's a merchants are willing to pay money for this kind of cashback because we can actually get more traffic to these merchants, and this is kind of where Capital One is going, and I also see Bank of America is doing Bank of America deals, so they have cashback deals in online banking, and there's actually a lot of studies to show that there's a people like this kind of approach that they combine online banking with retail offers.
Well, I wanted to follow up with that because I'm curious as to whether you have any hard data or intuitive data that what is the importance of cash back to small business?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, you know, we've been in the market for a couple of months now, and we have already accumulated more than $200 million worth of spending going through the product. So we have significant data to show already how we can help both the small business owners and the actual cardholders and also the retailers with this data. And here's a good example. So like using the Spend product, you can get significant cash back on your hotel purchases. So using Spend, you can book any hotel room in the world, and you will get up to 40% cash back. And while the prices are the same prices that you would see in popular travel sites like Booking.com or Expedia. So, you know, with that said, if you have a small business and you have people on the field and they spend nights at hotels, we're talking about significant savings in the form of cashback. And now company has, using Spend, now small business has a great opportunity to reward people or keep the money for the company either way they want. And we're also thinking about adding features like this money, this cashback that they have earned could be given to any charity of their choice.
What about the possibility of automobiles and airplanes?
Yeah, at the moment, we have cashback from transportation companies like Uber and Lyft. Air travel is a bit more challenging. At the moment, we do not have cashback on air travel. It's a very competitive space, so that we don't have. But in the future, we might be seeing some cashback on air travel as well, especially in the business class environment.
So the people that are the employees that are staying in hotels, I mean, that sounds like a phenomenal offer of being able to get 40% off. But if I'm a Marriott rewards, I get my Marriott points, and I might get a deal with you on Marriott. Or are there only certain companies that certain franchises that will give you discounts?
So we have cashback with almost, I could say, all the hotels out there. So we have all the chains, Hilton, Marriott, you name it. So we have over million hotels in our inventory. However, I have to mention that if you're enjoying our cashback, then you're booking through us, and in that case you do not get to keep your loyalty points that you would get if you would book directly with the hotel. So that's a difference. But then it really comes down to a fact that whether you like to get the points or the cash.
40% savings is, given the points that you get, 40% savings got to be phenomenal. Did you want to ask something, Don?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in. But, Erno, how do you make your money?
Yeah, so we make our money from the cashback. So whenever there's cashback coming from hotels or any other merchant, so we split the cashback with the so part of the cashback comes to us, and part of the cashback goes to the user. So that's how. And the other way how we make money is that we do have some what we call premium features for small business. So if they really want to unlock some advanced features, we charge like $4 per active user per month for features such as connectivity to QuickBooks. So that's how we make money.
Well, what made you decide? One more question, Dan. What
sure.
made you decide to go into this particular area versus other opportunities?
Well, yeah. Well, this was through a personal experience. So, as I said, I've been entrepreneur all my life, almost, and traveling a lot, and when I came to U.S., I was working on a retail space, working with the big box retailers like Walmart and Targets, and traveling across the country doing that. And I noticed that two things, that my expenses started to pile up. I always had a wallet full of receipts. And then while I was working with retailers, I noticed that there's a lot of money that they could be spending in the form of cashback like this, and nobody had connected these two dots in the market. So I saw a great opportunity there, and I started to build a company 2 years ago, and now we are 50 people. We have grown very, very fast, and we are planning to open up other markets besides America as well.
Erno, repeat your website again and spell it out for our audience.
So our website is spentapp.com, spentapp.com.
And if I'm a small business, how do I sign up for your product, and how do I use it? I'm a little unclear on that.
Yeah, so signing up to our product is very easy. You just go to spentapp.com, and there's a sign-up process. So you hit sign up, and you tell us what is your name of your company, give us your email address, and then we'll take you through a process to, we ask you a few questions about your company, and we have you sign up for free in less than 2 minutes. And then you can start inviting whoever you want to be submitting expenses to this software just by sending them link through the product, and they can download the app, and that's how you get going. Or it could be the other way around, that freelancers or employees, they find the app in the app store and download the app, and they invite the company to be connected to them. So it can be both ways.
Before we go further, Erno, we have to stop for a brief word from our sponsors. We're here with a very fascinating guest. who's talking about how it's easier to pay freelancers or contract workers. It's been fascinating. I'll turn it over to Dan for the next question.
How do you decide, Erno, how do you decide who the institutions are that you want to work with? How do you vet? How do you make decisions? I would like to work with ABC. How do you decide that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as we know that the product is ideally designed at the moment for companies that are in the size of less than 20 employees. So with that in mind, we look for partners, for example. So we work with a lot of credit unions who work with small businesses, and together with credit unions, we offer spend product. So that's a one approach. We work with insurance companies who, again, have a business relationship with small business owners. And then we also go directly to small business. So we do online advertising in mostly in Google, and try to find these small businesses through that. But I would say the most significant distribution channel for us is small banks and companies like insurance companies, and there's also new partners like WeWork, which is the new place for co-working space for freelancers. A lot of freelancers out there, so we try to get a deal with WeWork, and therefore they can partner with us and tell about our product to these freelancers and small business owners.
Don talked about how a company, small business, or an individual enrolls in your program. I guess I'm trying to go the other way. How do you go out when you use, for example, when you talked about the hotel rooms and the hotel, how did you decide who to go with, who not to go with? What was your process, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. Oh, that's what you mean. So we... when we started to build this product, we looked into the market, we did a lot of research, and we talked to small business owners that, where are they spending money? Where would they like to get cash back while they're doing expenses using our product? And with that said, there's a lot of restaurants. So we have thousands and thousands of restaurants where you can get cash back. Hotels is one big part. Then we have office supplies like Staples. For construction workers, we have cashback from Home Depot, for example. For electronics, we have Best Buy type of merchants. So basically where the small businesses are spending their money and where they are creating these expenses. So we needed to go out there and find these type of merchants to our cashback network. And we are building our cashback network bigger and bigger every day. And also, I want to mention one very interesting cashback partner that we have. I guess everybody is familiar with live event tickets, kind of like what you can get with Ticketmaster and StubHub. So we have musicals and even all the professional sports. I used to play ice hockey myself, so I'm a big hockey fan. So using Spend, I can also get my NHL tickets for example, Rangers game, and get 5% cash back on that. So that's touching almost the personal side of things. I mentioned early on that this product can allocate your personal and your business spending. So, that's more on the personal side. But you might have an occasion where you take your customers to a hockey game and purchase the tickets and get cash back, and then have that all of that going through the product to all the way to your bookkeeping. So there's a couple of examples.
So but I guess the question I'm not doing a very good job of asking it. do you go to the individual hockey teams or do you go to the NHL? How do you establish the relationship?
Yeah, so we do not go to the hockey teams and individuals. So we work through what they call aggregators. So for example, in the hotel space, there's these aggregators like online travel agents, like hotels.com and Expedia is one example of them. So we go to them and we say, you know, we would like to get your inventory and add it to our product. So that's how we were able to scale fast, significant covering in the market for cashback offering.
So in your relationship with Expedia, if I don't belong to Spent and I go to Expedia and I get a hotel room, I'm not going to get any cashback. I'm going to pay whatever the price is. But
that's right.
Is the price that I'm going to buy where I get cash back from you, is the asking price going to be the same as the Expedia price or something higher that gives me cash back?
It's going to be the same price. So so Expedia in that case, so we have a deal with Expedia. So in a way, we come from Expedia perspective, we become another channel of traffic for them. So they...
Sure.
This is why they want to pay us a commission. And, you know, we take this commission and we share this commission now with the user. So the user gets cashback and we make part of the commission. So that's how it works.
Okay. So, Don, this seems to me to be incredibly significant. Because if you can go to Expedia and pay $100 for a room, and you go to our friend here to Spend and get the same room and you can get it for 40% cash back, got to save a small business a huge amount of money.
I agree, Dan. In fact, I already sent a note to our sales manager to see how we can somehow work with Erno to make his product available to our listeners.
That's awesome.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, if we can put it on the website and maybe work out some kind of a commercial deal. But anyway, let's go back to our customers. Our customers are small entrepreneurs. They're not big businesses. What are the areas that you think that small businesses are missing the opportunity to get cash back?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. First of all, I want to touch on the expense management a little bit. So, you know, I've been a small business owner for a long, long time in my life. And oftentimes, small business owner is so focused on, you know, hands-on work that all of this admin type of work is something that they don't just maybe have the time to do it. So they, when we help them to file all of the expenses that they can, for example, deduct on taxes. So that's a big thing right there. So we make their lives easier in that sense. And then on the cashback side, I mean, if you look at it from a small business owner perspective, they would have to go, in order to get the maximized cashback from each vendor, they would have to have a deal, you know, like a loyalty kind of join into different loyalty program with each merchant separately. While using Spend, they get to enjoy thousands of them with one shot. So that's really a big, significant difference right there.
So, do I have time for one more question, Don?
Absolutely, just one more.
Okay, I'll try and be brief. I want to follow up on what you were just talking about. Earlier in the program, you talked about an individual submitting his expense report electronically to his boss, and the boss can approve it, and then the employee can get reimbursed quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming. That reimbursement is then being approved to come out of the corporate checking account, which then is electronically transferred from the corporate account into the personal account of the employee. Is that right?
Yeah, that's how it works. So when the company, the small business, when they enroll to the program, and if they want to utilize our reimbursement feature, all they have to do is they need to put in their ACH details, bank account number, and the routing number. That's how they connect the company bank account to the system. And then on the other side, on the receiving end, the user does the same. So now when the user is submitting the expense and the business owner approves it, the system automatically can then make this ACH payment overnight. So we built all of this to happen in the background. And that's a big benefit. And that as well, they save a lot of money. You know, if you wire money, that often costs a lot of money. So in this case, the ACH doesn't cost anything.
Right. And no, I think it's a phenomenal service, Don. And I appreciate the idea of you bringing this gentleman on. I thought that, it's a great idea. And Erno, I wish you the best of luck. And maybe we can work something out where we can help promote it on our website and get you some more customers. So thank you for joining us today.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
You know, well, Dan, you know there is a Harvey Weinstein in most organizations. I'd say all the organizations, but I have to qualify. It is almost always difficult to identify or oust such a person. Today we have career expert Denise Dudley. She's here to talk about various types of behavior, how you can deal with some people like that, and how you could avoid a career stoppage in any way. Denise, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm gonna start it, Denise, by tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit, and your website and your company. And then we'll go into the topic, which was just another victim, a high-profile victim, happened today.
Certainly. Well, my background officially is as a clinical psychologist, so I've been a psychologist for quite a while. And I began a career as the clinical director and director of training of a corporation of psychiatric hospitals. So I was running about 18 hospitals and also in charge of training, including sexual harassment prevention training, in 18 different hospitals throughout California. From there, I went on to found a company called SkillPath Seminars, which grew to become literally the world's largest public training company. So that's my company. We do about 18,000 seminars a year, and we train on all kinds of things, from management, supervision, leadership, whatever, and also sexual harassment prevention training. I'm actually a professional speaker and author, and I'm on the road quite a bit. In fact, I'm coming in your direction next week to Brooklyn and, gosh, Cherry Hill and D.C., so I'll be working out there doing some keynoting and such. So I'm on the road quite a bit doing all sorts of talks on many, many different topics, including this one. That's a little bit about me.
And your website?
Yes, my website is just Denise M. Dudley with an M in the middle, denisemdudley.com, where you can find me and find information about my newest book, which was really, I just wrote that one for young professionals just launching their careers. So there's a lot of advice in there about going on a job interview, and if you get hired, how to fit into your new company's culture. And there's even a chapter about how to gracefully move on if you've mismatched up to a company you thought was going to work out for you and didn't. So I've got a new book out, and you can find all of that information on my website.
What's the title of the book?
The title of the book is called Work It. Get In, Get Noticed, Get Promoted. And it's available on Amazon, and it's also available from SkillPath Seminars.
Okay. Well, the flavor of the day in today's world seems to be to root out all these sexual predators. But I guess my question is, where were the people last month and last year when they were doing all this? And why don't organizations do something about it?
Well, it's, I think what happens quite often, well, if we look at the literature for one thing, we know that sexual harassment occurs for men and women both, but a majority of women. We're about, if you look at different studies, it's always going to be about 80% women and about 20% men who are reporting sexual harassment at all, even if they're reporting it in arrears, maybe many years later when there's nothing they're going to do about it, but they're just simply recalling, oh, yeah, I was harassed way back there at that point in my life. We know that about 80% of women are harassed by men. We also know that it's generally a situation where the person in the position of power is harassing the person in a position of less power. That all seems kind of obvious, but I think it answers your question, which is that many, many people, when they are in a one-down position, a position of less power, don't want to be retaliated against. And if we also look at the literature here, the number one reason people, men and women both, but particularly women, do not report any kind of sexual harassment is fear of retaliation. That could be in the form of being terminated from a job, being moved to a lesser job, or even simply just being ignored or ostracized. So I think what happens is that when something like the Harvey thing occurs, a lot of people suddenly develop a little bit more nerve and say, you know what, I'm going to step forward and I'm going to say something because it's not correct to be quiet. Or the other thing that can happen is, wow, I'm in a position right now, this is a moment in time when sexual harassment is being discussed and not being tolerated. And so this may be a safe moment for me to step forward and say, yes, me too.
Denise, I have a whole bunch of questions. The first question deals with not so much Harvey, but the culture in Hollywood.
Yes.
And I saw a piece earlier this week that somebody was quoting that her, little key there, her solution to the problem is that we needed to get more women in power in Hollywood. And as I thought about that and what you just said about the person in power having the leverage, do we believe that if we had more women in power positions in Hollywood or in our businesses, that there would be less sexual harassment?
Very good question. And I would say that the answer to that on a certain level is yes, because what's going to happen is that we know that people, men and women both, but we'll just speak to women for a moment, we know that women in power, or generally people in power, are going to be the decision makers, the policy makers, the people who are going to decide how we handle certain events in any corporation, including in Hollywood at Universal Studios, MGM, a lot of the big ones. So more women in positions of power would, of course, imply that we're going to have more rigorous policies put in place combating sexual harassment, and that sexual harassment would probably receive a little bit more attention than if there were not women there to speak to the issue. So I'm going to agree with that and say yes. However, I don't necessarily agree with that being the solution. I think it's always wonderful to have women in positions of power in any organization, only because women add a delightful mix, I would like to think. I think of myself as part of a delightful mix, I suppose, when I'm in an organization. So I prefer to think of adding women for a variety of reasons, one of which might be combating sexual harassment. But I really believe that the real solution is training. And I'm not just saying that because I've been a trainer for my whole life. I'm truly not just trying to promote myself here. I just see from what I know that getting training and having organizations trained absolutely top down, by the way, so that no one is exempt from the training. That's a mistake that some companies make, where it's like, we'll send all the workers, but our senior executives don't have to go. I believe that the best thing is to get everyone into a good training program where we can recognize sexual harassment, we can understand what it is, both the subtle and the blatant versions of it, and then we can combat it, present a zero tolerance within our organizations, whether they're in Hollywood or elsewhere.
Do you think it's possible that one of the adverse consequences might be that, and it might be occurring actually today, is that the tension in the workforce between men and women is actually affecting productivity?
Wow, so that's a really good question, and I'm thinking of it. I'm not even sure which level you asked it on, but I think I want to address it on two different levels. One of them is, and it's yes and yes, by the way, the two levels that I'm thinking on. So on the level of sexual harassment, where it's really clearly occurring in the workplace, where perhaps women are receiving catcalls, you know, they work in an organization, I don't want to single out any one group of people, but let's just say they work in a construction company, and catcalls are common as they walk across the parking lot in the morning to jump on their forklift. Well, and we know that this happens. I mean, I work with organizations where I get told this sort of thing. So yes, there's a tension there because women don't want to hear that, or in office situations where men are making comments when they walk by or are making suggestive comments in the break room, it does create a tension because, and I really want to mention that men can be harassed as well, but we know that the majority of this is going to be men toward women, so that's why I'm using these as examples here, that it creates a tension because women don't want to hear it. People who are being harassed, which is not pleasant, become tense. They don't want to be there. They develop avoidance behaviors. There's a lot of stress around it, and it creates a certain kind of a tension in the workplace that is palpable, really, that you know, you can sense. The other way I want to address this, which is more subtle, and it's a harder thing to talk about, and it somewhat muddies the water here, but I'm still going to bring it up, is this, and that's that, you know, I don't want to live in a world where I have to be on guard and be suspicious of everything anyone says to me. And it's funny, this is the second interview I've done today on sexual harassment because it's a big topic, right? And earlier I was in another interview saying that I don't want to live in a world where I walk into an office and a man says to me, "Wow, you look great in red," and I kind of go, "Wow, what do you mean by that?" Because maybe they're just nice people and they're trying to give me a compliment. And I get a little sad when I think that we have to kind of clam up and develop rules where no one can be kind or no one can give each other a hug or no one can give each other compliments on physical appearance. When technically, sometimes I think that we almost have to go that far in order to protect people from the predators. So yes, I think that there's a lot of tension around this. There's tension in those of us who are pure of heart, so to speak, and now feel fearful about just simply saying a nice thing to a coworker of the opposite sex. And there's tension really from those of us who receive true sexual harassment in the workplace and don't want it any longer.
I understand what you're saying about the latter, but I have a sense that there is a perhaps a bit that you can come up with a better word. I get a sense that there is a great deal of nervous tension in the office complex because men are unsure as to how they're supposed to act,
mm-hmm.
and how they're being interpreted by women. And so because there is a fear of being misinterpreted, they don't say anything, which changes the whole communications dynamic of the way an office should work and how employees should work together to hopefully try and make the company successful.
Absolutely.
But I think this causing a problem, and maybe that's just the price we have to pay, but it's causing a problem in the interpersonal relationship between men and women in an office setting.
I agree with you. I completely agree with what you're observing, and I think I see it as well. And so, you know, in the face of what's coming out right now in the news with so many people, not just Harvey, but, you know, as you pointed out, there's a new one today. There have been several, and it's crossing everything from, you know, our president to people who are famous chefs, to all kinds of people, to writers, to all kinds of sorts of people, to professors, to presidents of colleges. And so it's making people edgy and making people feel nervous. And I don't know if it's currently just a pendulum swing, you know, where right now we're all kind of aware and on guard and we're raising our consciousness about this issue, which is, I believe, a good thing. And then it will calm down, where we'll be able to go back to just trying to think like normal people, and rather than men not knowing what to say to women and women being on guard for any little thing that might seem like sexual harassment, that we will calm down into a world where we remember to treat each other like human beings and just interact with one another in a natural sort of way.
Well, I have a foundation, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, that deals with veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, sleep deprivation, and suicide prevention.
Yes.
And most recent study from the Department of Defense on women veterans is that 54% of women veterans experience at least one example in their time in active duty of sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were queried as to why they were sexually harassed, the answer overwhelmingly was because the man in the foxhole wasn't convinced that she would have his back, and that he was taking an enormous amount of risk because if she couldn't pull him out of the foxhole, or she couldn't get him to safety because of her strength or lack thereof, his life was at risk. And so he didn't want them around, them meaning women.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a life and death issue in the case of the military, but still 51% of the women said they were harassed at least once, which is a different kind of harassment than what we're seeing or being reported in the workforce.
Definitely, and the other one
that still amazes me, I don't know that you can call it, but I suppose you could call it sexual harassment. The periodic stories that we hear of a high school teacher or an elementary school, primarily female teacher, having sexual relations with an underage child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you would classify that as sexual harassment, but, you know, it comes back to what we were talking about just a moment ago, and that was, what are we supposed to do with each other? And if this is a pendulum that's, and I don't know that it's swung all the way, I'm really angry, quite honestly, when I hear people like Jane Fonda or Barbara Waters saying, well, I didn't know. I mean, I think that's crap. If it's been so prevalent, not only just talking about Harvey, talking about the whole situation, you know, and then you have people like Oliver Stone said, I know, I wish I'd have done something, and on and on and on, people who are apologetic for what happened. Something's wrong somewhere, and I don't know whether it's the environment of Hollywood is unique, or is that what's going on in Hollywood going on regularly in other businesses. You might know about that.
Well, I think it's going on regularly in other businesses as well. And we know a lot of stuff about the types of sexual harassment that go on in regular, we'll just say corporations, businesses, small businesses, large businesses, and even in the government, of course. It is definitely going on, and it gets reported somewhat regularly, often, though, as I mentioned earlier, in arrears when people are looking back on it and saying, yes, I was harassed back there, I just didn't say anything about it because I didn't want to lose my job, or I didn't want to be ostracized by my peers. But the kinds of sexual harassment that are going on most commonly in workplaces right now fall into two categories. One's called quid pro quo, where basically I as a worker, I'm being offered a promotion, a raise, a better office, whatever, in return for a sexual favor. Or it's it's a quid pro quo, in at least I am being promised I will not be demoted or fired in return for a sexual favor. That's called quid pro quo. The other one is just called hostile work environment, and that's the catcalling, the comments, the lewd and lascivious looks and remarks. So those fall into those two categories, and I don't think that they really vary that much between Hollywood and what's happening at any organization, an accounting firm or a government agency. I just think that probably we all love to talk about Hollywood a bunch because we love talking about Hollywood. It's just a general thing, whether someone's having a baby or breaking up or being sexually harassed, Hollywood just gets a lot more attention than somebody on Wall Street right now. And that's just always been the case. I do think, though, that Hollywood is not going to be that much different in terms of who's being harassed by whom. It just might be a little bit more interesting for us to talk about right now.
Denise, can I interrupt and go
yes.
in a different direction?
Of course.
In Silicon Valley, and indeed in New York, and now they just discovered it, Dan, in Columbus, Ohio, many of these startup technical startup companies are top-heavy with males, but not sprinkled with women. And in fact, was pointed out at a tech show last week in New York City that there are only two women. It was a presentation of various companies, and of the 64 presenters, only two were women on the teams. And it seems to be prevalent across the country. Do you want to comment on that? It gets closer to our audience, I think.
Sure. So, it's funny, I was just talking about this in another interview last week, that I believe that we have made, I was being asked if I believed as a female that women have made progress in the world. I said, well, you know, if you go way, way back to suffragettes time, perhaps, you know, going way back to before women had the vote, which is hard for young women today to even imagine that that occurred, but it did, of course, before any of us were born on this radio show, of course. But if we go way, way back and we look at it on a scale, I guess, we'd say, sure, we've made tons of progress. If we look at it, though, since about the 1980s or so forward, at the point when women started to appear in the workforce in significant and more meaningful ways, we weren't simply just telephone operators or grade school teachers, then I would say that we haven't really made significant progress on a really large level. I just mentioned these companies, and I, by the way, have former students who've gone to work for all of these companies. So I know the inside of Apple, of Amazon, of Google, Microsoft. I could name a whole bunch of others. And if we look at the management structure there, all of those are run by male CEOs. And if we get to that CEO level, very few women. Now, senior vice presidents, yes. And then in particular in tech companies, Silicon Valley, we know that women are way, way behind when it comes to a special kind of characteristic of coding, being able to code. And there actually are some grants and funds right now that are being allocated to help women become coders, because coding is a very valuable and powerful skill to have when you're entering the tech market. And we're way behind as a female population in that particular skill set right now.
What do you think we are?
Beg your pardon, I'm sorry?
Why do you think that women are so far behind in that skill set?
In that particular skill set? Well, it's interesting. There are a couple of interesting documentaries on that, in fact, in that way back when video games came out and got introduced, it was more or less assumed that boys would be playing video games more than girls. And they actually skewed the games. This is just interesting stuff. It's a little obscure here, but they skewed the games more toward what boys would like to do than what girls would like to do in original video games. So this is way back. Now those people who are gamers, as we might call them, are now in their 30s, and they became predominantly male. So now what we're trying to do is make sure that girls, young girls, grade school level going forward, are introduced to the wonders of the world of computers, of Silicon Valley, of what we can do, of of AI, and we're trying to make sure on an educational level that we're starting girls out at a younger age to the possibilities, I guess I'd say, of being able to be coders and to enter that particular world, which is a very promising world and holds a lot of future jobs, as we all know. So it apparently had to do with not being really oriented and indoctrinated.
Well, it's interesting, Denise. I sit on the board of the National Robotics Education Foundation.
Wow.
And we hit that wall. But it's interesting. From ages 7 to 13, there are equal people involved in the various male and boys and girls. But at the age 13, girls seem to discover something called boys and go in one direction, and there's a precipitous drop-off in girls participating in robotics. Our foundation happens to be run by a woman, again, in study after study, they found that to be the case. STEM education is trying to address that issue, but no one's come up with good answers. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that probably we just want to keep at it. I'd be interested in your. I know you're interviewing me, and I'm not supposed to interview you, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it because you're closer to it than I am. Definitely, if you're on this board, I think that probably what happens is that we just keep at it. That we just make sure that girls are exposed as much as boys at all ages. And then, of course, there comes that choice point where I decide to play baseball and you decide to play the violin. That's okay, because I think we should all have a right to choose our path as well, since we're not in the Soviet Union and we don't have our careers chosen for us. Then choosing our career should be our option in this country. However, I just would want to make sure that all the options were left open in the most natural and objective of ways, rather than introducing ideas to girls that you can't be a coder or you can't be involved in robotics any more than I would want to introduce to boys that they can't be ballet dancers. I would want them to make sure that their options were truly open and not controlled. That would be what I would hope for most young people.
Well, I happen to believe that whether we like it or not, I still think that the roads are somewhat skewed one way and the other. I'm old enough to remember in the 60s, my first wife was a woman's liver. And in fact, but the interesting part was that she did break a few barriers. But in the end, the barriers created the glass ceiling. But 50 years later, from the 60s to today, there's still a lot of places where women are still considered, quote, different and not presidential material. That's my feeling, but you're the guest. Please tell us your feelings.
About women not being considered presidential material, as in President of the United States level material?
Well, I don't want to go there on that one. Let's stick with the president of companies.
Or just president of a company. Okay, I wasn't sure which way you meant it, I think those would be different questions. So, yes, I do believe.
You'll get that one next from Dan.
That's okay. There'd be some different considerations, but it might be boil down to the same thing. I think that women are often not considered presidential material for some reasons that are pretty outmoded and outdated, having to do with, well, you know, women are definitely going to want to run off and have babies, and then they're going to take time off. And, you know, we've heard this for a very long time, that I promote a woman to president or to CEO or to CFO, and sure as anything, she's just going to want to go have a family. Well, I think that's pretty outdated. I know many, many career women, including myself, who have managed to have a family and also have not missed a beat when it came to running a company. In fact, literally, I was CEO of SkillPath while I had two children and managed to raise them into very fine young men, and also ran a company and never missed any part of either one. So I think that that's probably a bogus argument. And really, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about this on the radio, but the other one that's so old is the idea of that women menstruate and they're going to have periods and they're going to be really crabby and they're going to be really emotional. Well, you know, that's just, come on, you know, that's pretty old. And I know an awful lot of women, myself included, where you wouldn't have a clue where I was in my cycle because a professional just doesn't do that. So I think that it's time that we give up on some of those arguments against women.
Now, Dan, ask your question.
No, I'm not. You know, I think that there are. I'm from the school that believes that men are men and women are women, and they're different. They're not the same. Mm-hmm. They're not put together the same. They don't
thank God.
They don't think the same, and so. The idea that we have to create a unisex environment, I think basically stifles the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that Mrs. Clinton could have been a decent president based on what's been coming out? I don't think so. I think she was a corrupt person. That wasn't because she was a woman. She was just fundamentally a corrupt person. I think you can have people that are predators, both males or females. And what our society has to do is to try and figure out how to strike a balance. I don't think we should be electing people to office because it's time we have one. I don't think we should be thinking in terms of women of president of the United States because we need one, because we've not had one before. We should be electing people in presidential offices who we think have the ability to do what is necessary for the people of this country and keeping the people safe. And that doesn't necessarily mean it can't be a woman. But so far, I haven't seen one that has all of the skill set. And that may very well be a function of a lack of enough broad experience in the private sector in the senior levels of operations to give them the experience and the opportunity to make appropriate proven decisions over time that would qualify them to be higher executives, whether it be cabinet secretaries, vice president, or president of the United States.
And I actually don't think I know one woman, whether I know her personally or I've just read about her, who would say that we want a woman elected president simply because it's time or because we want a woman in there. I don't know of anyone who wouldn't agree with you that whether it's the CEO of Microsoft or president of the United States, that we should be bringing in the person who's most qualified for the job, regardless of their race or sex or anything else.
Where's your home base?
My home base is in California. I'm out in California, so that's where I am right now.
Well, I can tell you in New York, you will find a great number of liberal women who were disappointed because they said, quote, it was time to have a woman president, regardless of her ability to serve. I don't know that that's true in California, but I sure heard it a lot in New York. So, I agree with you. I think we should be making decisions based on the ability of the individual to handle the job. The problem becomes, how does that individual prove that he or she is best qualified for the job? And that's something we're still living with and trying to figure out.
You bet.
And
yeah.
It's a big challenge. Are we?
Well, I agree with you.
Have we run up against the clock, or have we run over again,
Don? We've long since passed the clock, Dan. But we've had such
hours.
Great guests. my engineer today said that I've let our guests too long, but if they're like you, it's worth it, and it's up to us to edit it down. But thank you, Denise. Tell us again your website, your book, and how people can reach you.
Certainly. My website is denisemdudley.com. And the new book I have out right now, available on Amazon, is Work It. Get in, get noticed, get promoted. It's written for young people just beginning their career jobs. And you can also find me via SkillPass Seminars, which is the company I founded many years ago. So there are many ways to find me, and it's been a pleasure talking with both of you. I could have talked for hours.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.